Friends, I know you're here because you're looking for a holistic solution for your child's eczema. No more Band-Aid solutions. I know your heart is being bled dry from watching your sweet little ones suffer day in and day out. I have to tell you about the Organic Skin Comfort Trio. It's the easiest first step to take. This trio is a game changer for eczema-prone skin. It has three essential products in it, and they're all crafted with the ultimate care, with just eczema kiddos in mind. First is the herbal oil. It's a soothing blend of botanical extracts that are carefully chosen for their skin nurturing properties. Say goodbye to dry, irritated skin as this oil works its magic. It infuses your little one's tissues with vitamin C, lymph-moving manjisa, hydrating marshmallow root. There's so much more in it too. It calms the nervous system and protects their skin from irritants. And then after bath, you follow that up with the anti-itch, anti-staph spray. It's a quick drying, powerful ally in the fight against itching and infection. It's formulated to calm inflamed skin and combat harmful staph bacteria. The spray offers relief from the relentless itching too, that you all know accompanies these really hard to look at flare-ups. And then lastly, there's the Skin Soothing Cream. It's a thick, rich, bioavailable formula designed to pamper your child's delicate skin. It's enriched with skin-loving ingredients like tallow and castor oil. This cream helps to reduce inflammation, redness, discomfort. It leaves your skin feeling soft and smooth and deeply moisturized. I remember when I used to put other creams on my child's skin, and it was absorbed before I was even done with their tiny little bodies. This one isn't like that. And as a special bonus for skincare purchasers, you can access the Clear Skin Kids course at a steep $100 discount. This course provides invaluable insights and all of the practical strategies to help you manage your child's eczema and ultimately reverse it in using natural solutions. No more costly and time-sucking doctor's appointments, no more fruitless research, no more putting less than ideal ingredients onto your little one's skin. You will be equipped with the knowledge and the tools to support your child's skin from the inside out in a manageable and affordable way. In 90 days, you will be looking at a completely different child. Your child will not only feel better, they'll be more rested, they'll focus more, their behavior will be better. We talk a lot about that in today's interview. And that baby soft skin will finally be uncovered, and their digestive wellness will come about, and their immune systems will actually start to function. I know the suffering that takes place in not only the child experiencing eczema, but for the whole family that supports them. And I'm hoping to remove the needless emotional turmoil and the extra expenses it takes to support a chronically ill person. Start with the Skin Comfort Trio and then synergistically incorporate the diet, the symptom management routines, the home modifications, and the child-friendly supplements from the Clear Skin Kids course. Wellness is waiting for you and your little one. You just have to claim it. Like, change the trajectory of their lives. Get started at eczemakids.com. Head to the Soothing Skincare tab, snag your course discount, and get going right away. I'm really excited to bring Dr. Weish to you today. She's a functional nutrition practitioner, a math and science educator, a TEDx speaker, and a podcaster. She comes to functional nutrition and education with a mission to reframe health and cognition and optimal function for kids with disabilities. Dr. Weish believes that sound nutrition and an equal education are the birthright of every child, and her perspective is shaped by her autistic, non-speaking 16-year-old son with Down syndrome, and he's a published poet and author. It was really fun to get her notes on optimal nutrition, inflammation-reducing practices, how we can support our children's gut brain axis, and so much more. So without further ado, let's bring on Dr. Weish. Are you ready to get rid of your child's eczema naturally? Through organic, holistic solutions and skincare that not only reduce inflammation, itch, and infection, but address the holistic health of your children? Are you prepared to guide your family toward genuine well-being? I'm Andrew McHugh, your trusted guide that will help you navigate conflicting advice, avoid potentially dangerous solutions, and advocate for your children so your family can get back to health, happiness, and sleep. Let's do this. Hi, Dr. Weish. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Andra. It's so good to see you again.
Yeah. Well, we had a conversation on your podcast, Functional Nutrition and Learning for Kids is what you call it.
That's right. That's right.
And that was so enlightening. I mean, I learned a lot even as the interviewee. And so I'm really excited to have you here for my audience because you have such a wealth of wisdom to share. And I'm also just excited because you're a mama that walks the talk. Like, I know you're not only well educated, but your eldest son was born with Down syndrome and was later diagnosed as autistic. And I know doctors gave you like very little hope with his condition and very little hope for a better circumstance for your son and your family. And you created your own path. And that really resonates with me. And I know with our group of listeners that we have today, because we're all here watching our kids, experience suboptimal health and happiness in their own ways. And that's really heartbreaking as a parent. And I just want you to know, like, your story, it serves as a beacon of hope, really, and an inspiration. So with that, just would you mind introducing yourself and your work to my listeners today?
Oh, thank you for your introduction. And my name is Vaish Sarathy, and my doctor is because I have a PhD in environmental chemistry, and I am mom to two kids. My oldest, he's 16, and he's non-speaking. He's autistic, and he has Down syndrome. My daughter is 13 years old and neurotypical. And a lot of my journey here. So, I let when people ask me what I do, and I worked a lot with wording what I do because I feel like I do a lot of things. And then I realized that all of it has to do with supporting a child's growth, in especially in terms of learning. So, and I like to say that I support learning from the inside out. And that's why it's the functional nutrition part is gut health and nutrients that support brain health, nutrients that support cognition, and so on. And the outside is, I mean, I am a chemist. I do teach math and chemistry both to non-speaking kids one-on-one, and I also tutor AP chemistry and calculus. So just working with, hundreds of students, both neurotypical and neurodivergent, I've also developed a lot of specific learning strategies that, especially with my son, it had to be really outside the box. And I call that nonlinear education. So that's the outside part, which is the nonlinear education, and the inside part is the functional nutrition.
Nice. So I'm hoping that you can shed some light on all of those subjects, really, but specifically about the gut-brain axis. Like, you hear a lot about that and its various impacts on health, including conditions like eczema and certainly other cognitive disabilities. And I was just hoping that you could just first like elaborate on that concept and what we can really do as parents to support that.
Absolutely. So the gut-brain axis is a two-way pathway connecting the gut and the brain. And one of the biggest, so what that means to me is that, and probably to everybody, is that gut inflammation creates neuroinflammation. But what's really interesting is that neuroinflammation also creates gut inflammation. So it goes back and forth. And I think that especially when we're working with our neurodivergent learners, there's really very little hope of being effective in your support if we're not addressing gut health. And gut health is such a generic term. There's so much, like, everybody's saying gut health and nobody knows what gut health means. So honestly, the gut is starts from your mouth and ends at your rectum. So it's everything that, so gut health could be the health of your a food pipe, but it could also be the health of your stomach, or it could be the health of your intestines, small intestine, large intestine. Everything comes under gut health. Usually, when people are talking about gut health, I notice that they're probably, some people might be talking about indigestion. Some people might be talking about food allergies and sensitivities. Sometimes people are just talking about constipation. But overall, there's two broad things. Three broad things that that you can categorize gut health in, and one is some sort of indigestion where you're not digesting certain types of food or maybe any food correctly and absorbing the nutrients. And then, so I call this the three I's: indigestion, inflammation, and infection. Now, indigestion can cause inflammation, infection can also cause inflammation. So that's the second I. And the third I is infection, which is overgrowth of some, bacteria, yeast, other parasites, fungi, etc., that are not in the right balance in your gut. And we see almost all three of these in any child that is experiencing chronic, any sort of chronic condition, honestly.
So my listeners are super well aware that, you know, microbiome diversity and then overall gut health. And that was really helpful to hear you to categorize it in those three different areas. They're all really well aware that this is like the reason that the eczema that they're dealing with is so severe, and possibly any learning challenges or behavioral challenges. Like they know this. Now, are there specific dietary interventions or protocols that you really recommend for kids with eczema just to help optimize their gut health and promote a balanced gut-brain axis?
The one thing that I have seen in common with a lot of kids that have eczema is excess histamine. While I don't specifically work with a lot of kids with eczema, a lot of times when I'm working with children, we're working on addressing dysregulation or other gut issues. But when I do have kids with eczema, some of them seem to respond really well to a low histamine diet. But the thing with histamine is that it's not just the obvious high histamine foods that release histamine, right? So it's not just reducing tomatoes and fermented foods. And that may be very obvious, but if you're reacting to gluten and dairy, that is also a reaction that can also, like, you know, load up your bucket, your histamine bucket as such. So for me, one of the non-negotiables, and this isn't specifically for eczema, this is for anybody struggling with neurological challenges, is that is going off gluten and dairy, at least for a short trial period. Well, not so short, at least for a few months of trial period. Having said that, I'd like to say that if neurological challenges aren't your child's thing, and if then I also do advise against too much restriction. So there might be a rare case in which a kid doesn't need to go gluten and dairy free. I rarely see that, but it's possible.
I mean, in our community, those are good things to go without. I suggest for 90 days, just, I mean, yeah. They're inflammatory foods, right? And they're experiencing this inflammatory condition, and it does serve them to omit those for a short period. And, you know, there are so many things that you can do. It's like when you have a histamine intolerance, which I believe everyone suffering from an inflammatory skin condition does.
Mm-hmm.
How do you work in like probiotics and prebiotics with the people that you're lowering their histamine?
That's a hard one, right? So because then you can't do fermented foods. And, you know, I do want to share a little bit about fermented foods later. But so usually you want to try a probiotic that doesn't have histamine releasing bugs, or it's kind of there are some low histamine probiotics in the market. But yeah, so it's not easy. But yeah, I don't worry so much about prebiotics. Maybe I should, but that's not something that I've gone that I've worried about. One of the things I try to do is, because once you start dealing with chemical sensitivities, there's so much. I've kind of changed my approach over time, where I used to be like, yeah, restrict, and that is not serving my population, because that's further restricting the diversity of the microbiome. And food diversity is really important. If you're already limiting gluten and dairy, you may need to be low histamine, but I would rather not push that too much and see if I can bring in something like a histamine block, which is a supplement that has some histamine degrading enzymes and some other activity to support histamine metabolism. But it depends on the extent of intolerance. Obviously, if somebody's like super reactive, that may not be enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fine line, right? And especially when you're dealing with kids. And I remember being in the place where I was, you know, afraid to feed my kids. It's like, oh my goodness, like it just feels like they're reacting to everything. And in our case, you know, it wasn't like, oh, this makes them flare. Like they're just in this constant flared, you know, experience. And it was horrible. So I can empathize with both sides. And of course, if you say you're omitting like eggs or something to an allopathic doctor, they'll say immediately, like, stop doing that, you know, and it's a red flag in your file to be sure. And never were my kids underweight. So like, thankfully we never had to deal with that. But what is the silver lining? What I found to be, you know, exciting is like all whole real food is pretty much on the table. You know, like you can take out a few things, like for our population, eggs and nuts and, you know, those types of whole real foods. you do better without those for those just 90 days, but still, like all fruits, all animal proteins, all legumes, you know, except for peanuts. Anyway, it really is a very large bounty, and use when you do it on a seasonal basis, I know that helps inoculate your microbiome, your kid's microbiome. And so that's what we strive for here. Just words to like help all of the parents out there, because I live this struggle every day. I know the struggle, and obviously you do too.
Yes. And I
What
think one of the bigger things, like I think of extreme food restriction. I'm not just talking about gluten and dairy, but I'm thinking of when you're in a situation where one is reacting to many foods, that is like removing all the foods is a short-term solution, right? So it's not sustainable. It's not, and it doesn't necessarily give you a long answer. So if you're looking at a long goal, I would look at a food sensitivity test like gluten, dairy, and eggs, like you said, and maybe some nuts or whatever it is that you're reacting to. So like pull out the big three and just make the diet anti-inflammatory. And then I would say look at infections in the gut. So are you having, because those bacteria can release histamine. So it's not just histamine, of course, like skin infections are not just, but the load, the inflammatory load to the body, the histamine load, whatever other loads there are, can come from multiple places. So I would say take out the high hitters in your food sensitivity, and then that, and especially foods like gluten and dairy, which we know cause inflammation. Now, there are studies. There's a famous study by Dr. Alessio Fasano, who's kind of a gluten expert, and which studied people who had celiac. So that was group one. And then they studied people with non-celiac gluten sensitivity, group two. And group three had neither. So people like me, like I personally don't react to gluten at all. I could eat any amount and I'd be fine. My son has non-celiac gluten sensitivity. My daughter also has non-celiac gluten sensitivity. I think we're checking her for celiac, actually. But what they found in the study was that all three groups had intestinal permeability markers, which is the fancy word for a leaky gut, when they ate gluten. So gluten was causing and does cause leaky gut in everybody, even people like me and the people you see on the street that we're jealous of, and you think, oh, how can they eat so much gluten? It causes leaky gut in us too. And I mean, to oversimplify things, if you're thinking of skin issues as a leaky skin, then you really want to avoid the something that we know causes leaky gut.
Absolutely. So my goal is to get all of my clients to the place where, they can have everything in moderation, and including gluten and including all the things. But yeah, you can't do it meal after meal after meal. It's just not, like you said, a healthy practice for anyone, no matter how strong you are. And kids' digestions is just naturally weaker than ours. You don't come out of the chute like super strong. I know you've read the GAPS diet and all of those types of books. And when I read that, and she draws parallels to eczema and autism, where inflammation is obviously at the core of those and most issues. And I'm just wondering, what do you find from a functional nutrition or a supplemental approach that helps with dealing with that inflammation?
I think it's a long game. Yeah. So I think there is, like we already talked about, a basic removal. And then once the most amazing thing I've seen is that if you can actually get past the stage of removing gluten, dairy, and refined sugar from a child's diet, you've removed the hard, especially sugar, you've removed the hard hitters that are causing inflammation in the first place. I mean, the first thing to cure inflammation is to remove things that are causing inflammation, right? So if you're sitting on a tack or a pin, continuing to sit and putting a band-aid on doesn't help. So no, the number of spices or the number of healing foods is not going to make that. It may make a difference, but if you have to really remove like the few primary things that are causing the inflammation. And after that, I would say that doing some gut tests, that could be an organic acid test or a stool test to make sure that you don't have any pathogenic organisms that are overgrowing. Yeast can be a big hitter. And then finally, then comes the healing protocol, right? So there it's one of the things that I found really good is I started leaning a little bit on herbal medicine. This as you could do this in parallel or after you have attained an equilibrium, is that I know I think did we have this conversation? But I'm really partial to herbs, mucilaginous herbs like slippery elm and marshmallow root, and aloe vera for some people. But yeah, it's been pretty great for my son. I think those have been like the really those herbs have been very instrumental in healing his gut and, just providing this anti-inflammatory terrain.
Yes, I believe in those herbs wholeheartedly. We put those herbs in our prebiotic tea, and then marshmallow root I have within my herbal oil. It really does help like coat those intestines, and those are prebiotics. Like that's what those little microbes need to eat. So that's really helpful. What about like specific foods that you think really help?
Other than herbs, I actually recommend that people eat a lot of diverse root vegetables. I've seen that that is just enabling prebiotic and just getting a variety of prebiotic fiber is critical to microbial diversity. And it's also, I feel like it builds a certain, this is going beyond inflammation. And the reason I really like, because root vegetables are hard to like. Once you can build a flavor for fermented foods, and if you can tolerate fermented foods, right? A ferments and for roots, I feel like it builds a sort of oral intelligence. In terms of not just the probiotics inhabiting, so there's the intelligence of the bugs themselves that are inhabiting your system, but it also a child that can start to tolerate new foods can tolerate new environments and can it's a path to progressing. They can tolerate new sensations, they can tolerate difficult emotions. It's everything is sensory, is a sensory onslaught, right? But getting our children, and this is not an easy game, and this can take years because my son was, when he was 4 and a half, he used to have literally only dairy, wheat, and sugar. So those were three foods that he had. I remember one naturopath suggesting that maybe he should have less of these or take them off. And I said, what would he eat? And truly, we actually went cold turkey on the GAPS diet, and he had the hardest 2 or 3 weeks. But now it's amazing. Like he loves salads and he loves roasted root vegetables and he loves foods that, I find difficult to eat. So there is something to developing this. I'm losing the palate, intelligence of the palate. So that it's beyond, the body has to also learn to be in an anti-inflammatory state. A lot of times it's not specific foods that cause, that create an anti-inflammatory state beyond what we talked about, but it is different foods. It's the ability to have all of these different foods that do that. And yeah, so I think the diversity is more important in my mind than specific foods, especially with root vegetables. Not only are they full of prebiotics, but and I know you're a fellow fan of Ayurveda, but root vegetables are very vata balancing, which is, they reduce the dryness in the body. And according to Ayurveda, all nervous system dysregulation is a vata disorder. So it's very hard to find kids that eat root vegetables. But yeah, my daughter won't, my son will.
Really, yeah, it's a tough sell in the McHugh household for sure, but I still do it. It's okay. I just, charge through the moans. It's fine. How do you manage food in your home as a mom? Just how does your neurotypical child like eat this way? Like you said, she's not a fan of
Yeah, we
root.
have five people in our home. Everybody eats different foods. I am the worst person you should be asking that question to. Thankfully, the fifth person is my mom, who also lives with us, and she's a great cook. So if it was just up to me, I would just make food for Sid, who's my son. I say, everybody figure it out, right? But I do not have the patience to be a short order cook for four people. That's not, I cannot do that. I mean, if somebody is neurotypical and able, I couldn't care less what they ate. So I that is not my job. But I will definitely go the extra, and for Sid, of course, and maybe for myself. So my mom, so we have two people navigating the food situation. So it helps. But my husband's an extremely picky eater, and he will not eat anything that's gluten and dairy free. He will only eat gluten and dairy. So and so that's one. And my daughter is slowly changing, but she's not, I wouldn't call her a picky eater. I would say she's developing that intelligence of the palate. She's realizing that she's maybe sensitive to gluten. And the magic that happens when you go off gluten is that initially it's very hard, but slowly as the inflammation dies down, and as when you drop, especially when you drop sugar and gluten, you actually start eating a bigger diversity of foods. You start eating different foods that you wouldn't have eaten before. So, and my son eats a lot of he eats a lot of fermented grains and vegetable soup. So that's how he eats.
That's amazing. Do you batch cook that stuff, or is it head
I
shake your mom?
batch make the fermented grain batters. Yeah. So for these are called dosas in Italy. So it's just rice and different lentils soaked and soaked overnight, ground into a batter, fermented, and then we steam them or make them into crepes. And the batter is batch made. So it's probably made for a week or so. And then it just sits in the fridge. And that's a live sourdough kind of batter. It's a wild ferment where you're not actually adding anything, it just ferments from the environment. But the vegetables, I'll just put those are kind of our basic, like what do you call them? Like our basic foods, staple foods, where like it's like the staple is the grain ferment, and at night he has a vegetable soup. Other things we'll figure it out, like we maybe a gluten-free pancake, maybe lentil crepes or something like that in the morning for him. So that kind of stuff. So he eats kind of a more idealized diet.
So, and everyone else is doing different stuff.
Everyone else is, yeah, doing different stuff.
You're gonna have to, do you mind sending me that fermented grain batter recipe?
Yeah,
I
I
would love
can.
to try that.
Yeah, I can. I actually, so it's the crepe that you made from the fermented, you one makes is called a dosa, which is spelled DOSA. And I at a point I had started a dosa challenge, which is now available for free. It's just you go in and there's instructions there. It's functionalnutritionforkids.com/dosa, DOSA, but I'll send you the recipe.
I can also go and download it. Do it, guys. Let's do it all together and we will conquer one more skill in the kitchen. That sounds amazing. And I've heard of dosas. I did not know that it was so involved. I'm sure, as with anything, once you get the hang of it, it's not so bad.
It's actually, yeah, it's the fermenting process, and soaking takes overnight, and then the next day you ferment. But it's not hard.
Good news. That's
Long but not hard. Yeah.
amazing. Sure. Yeah. I guess that would be the theme of like everything we do here. It's like, yeah, it's a lot of hands-off time. Like, yeah, overnight or what have you, an hour in the oven, but it's not a lot of hands-on time, which is good news. You just have to restructure your schedule so you can accommodate it and whatever that means for you. And I firmly believe no matter what you have going on and how many hours you work, like I know you do a lot of things and you're still able to feed your son in this way. So that's incredible.
Yes, but I will definitely be the first person to agree that it is not possible to make multiple meals for multiple people. Yeah,
No.
that's not, yeah.
That's not how we roll here. It's a
Yeah.
one and done. And you know,
Yeah.
sometimes my 9-year-old doesn't have dinner, you know, but
Yeah. Yeah.
she's fine. That's her totally her choice. It's not
Yes.
because there wasn't food available. And then she eats a
Exactly.
bigger breakfast. And it's okay. I mean, I know for sure nobody's going to let themselves starve. So I feel good in that. I did also want to talk to you about, like, I know you have a lot of good thoughts about just constipation and things like that in general, because like those are things that come up when you have a compromised digestion, as all of our kids, all of our listeners do. What are some things you do with that?
I think it's really important to have a bowel movement every day by hook or crook. Crook might mean Miralax. I prefer not to go that way. So, I mean, I would, if a child needs magnesium citrate, right, or vitamin C to help them poop. I mean, I think that's valid. But having said that, while doing that, I'd also be looking for what's going on in there. So there's multiple things that can cause constipation, and I have a constipation toolkit on my website. But the few things that, you know, sometimes it can be a food sensitivity, it's very commonly dairy. With the Down syndrome population, it's really common to have an underactive thyroid. So if your child has hypothyroid, that can be a big reason for constipation. With the if your child does not have Down syndrome and they're autistic, they could still have a underfunctioning thyroid, but a lot of times it's more likely than not that there's a food sensitivity going on. There could also be, the answers are kind of the same. It's interesting. We ask these questions in different ways, but ultimately I'm kind of saying the same things. An infection, for example, an yeast overgrowth, a candida overgrowth in the gut can sometimes cause constipation, actually can very often cause constipation. In my son, that's often a pretty big root cause. So it's if he because he's prone to candida, and if that happens, that can cause constipation.
So in the moment when you're dealing with a kid that's struggling, you give them magnesium citrate and vitamin C.
Or vitamin C, yeah, or both. Yeah, depends on, yeah.
And then what other supplements do you really recommend? I borrowed a lot of notes from this neurodiverse community when I was developing my protocol and researching for my own kids. You know, there's just like I said, there's a lot of similarities and a lot of things happening. So I got a lot of supplements from like Brainchild Nutritionals and things like that. What are like some top supplements that you think are just really beneficial for kids that are just have excessive inflammation in their bodies?
Omega-3s, some form of probiotic. Unfortunately, that's kind of trial and error depending on the child. There is no one probiotic that works for everybody. A lot of people, and I won't take brands for probiotics simply because I've definitely had an experience where I sometimes recommended brands, and I just ended up like this was a person that I'd met on the street, and I didn't meet them for years after that, and it turned out they were on the same supplement. I had casually mentioned one, and they were on the same supplement for years, and it was causing their son constipation. And I said, "Well, why didn't you come back and tell me it wasn't working for you?" And they said, "I thought you said it, so it must be okay." So and to all your listeners, they probably already know this, but it is, if something isn't working for you, no matter who said that, I think it might be time to stop and reevaluate. And even the best supplements can cause reactions in people, right? So even so, you do not want to stick with something that is causing a side effect. So, backing up, I would say vitamin D, omega-3 fatty acids, some form of probiotic that's working for you, whether that's from a raw ferment or from a more controlled probiotic capsule. A lot of kids do well with curcumin. There will be a rare kid that doesn't, but usually curcumin. And then finally, in the population that I work with, B vitamins are a big one.
I mean, I found that ours are lacking in B vitamins as well. Like they're just depleted in general because their body is working so hard just to function. And you know, we don't take curcumin on the side. I just incorporate turmeric where I can. So it's like it's a real hard one to slip in there because it is so vibrant, unfortunately. So my kids can sniff it a mile away, but I still throw it in. You know, we have some that and I recommend rotating, and I definitely recommend getting out in the sun as much as possible for the vitamin D, you know, especially in the morning. And that's really counterintuitive, especially for my listeners, because it's because their skin is in such a dire place, but it's like, you know, that vitamin D is like 100% necessary for whole body health and obviously bone health, but you know, circadian rhythms and all the things. That's helpful just to have that short list though of things that you resort to. Like in the curcumin, do you have, is there a chewable? Because a lot of our kids are younger.
There is so there. I will mention a brand that I've used a lot, but it's called Enhancer, and they have a pretty strong extract of curcumin. By strong, I mean a high potency extract, and they make a drink, or and they have a powder that it's not technically a chewable, but you could just put it like I think it's like some sort of a drink mix that you could mix it in.
Nice. Thanks. I'll check that out. I promise I won't have my kids on it for 10 years. So. No, it's really nice. We supplements aren't really a thing for us anymore. It was vital to our healing and recovery, but yeah, now, you know, we do just the traditional ones, and it's hard, you know, with any of our kids. It's just that there's in the multivitamins or anything marketing to kids, like one, I found the potency to be so low, right? Like that you'd have to take 50 servings to make a dent at all. And then two, they throw in just all this extra junk. And even if it's not junk, it's still just like maybe things that trigger our extra sensitive little kiddos. So it's a tough road to navigate, and especially without an MD, or like it's just like
It
a
is, and I think that while supplement combinations may be easily accessible, that's one place. If you have a highly sensitive kid, there may be like one vitamin that they're sensitive to, and it's very hard. So that's where lab testing, such as organic acid testing, and that's expensive, but that can help you kind of titrate the supplements that you want. And there are other, there's SpectraCell, there are other specific tests, but if you can't do that, then you just have to kind of do trial and error.
My clients have babies, they're under 12 months old. And so this testing obviously isn't available for them. And that's where we were too. And so, yeah, I typically recommend that you do that last. Like you first do everything you can nutritionally and, symptom management wise, and do everything that you can to mitigate the inflammatory assaults in your home, and then go for supplements, and lastly do testing. And in the end, 90 days from now, you will still be looking at a healthier kid with a more intact skin barrier, certainly. Like nothing has been lost. And then at that point, if you're doing all of those things and you're still noticing symptoms, then yes, it 100% makes sense to move forward with testing. And there has to be an underlying reason, that you're missing. And
Yes.
I also wanted to talk to you about, and I know that you must have had these feelings tenfold, just when you have to deal with a chronic condition, and I don't like the word chronic condition, but just, something that you have to contend with that's more than a cold, right? For a long period of time. And it seems like you have to be so careful and conscious as a parent. And you notice your friends or family members that are just like, meh, and they just get to order pizza at the pool every day and it's fine for them. How do you deal with those feelings of just what your family is going through and just your continued effort? And do you have any strategies to kind of come to terms with that as a mom and as a leader of your family, just anything to help your nervous system calm and carry on?
That particular thing doesn't trigger me as much as seeing my child experience a discomfort. Or, there was a time when my daughter was struggling with rashes, or like chronic stomach pain. And of course, Sid has struggled with multiple health issues over time. So seeing that, seeing a child struggle is really hard. And that's where, I'm really the way I. My fight or flight response is like, let's try this, let's try this, let's try this. And I want to like throw like 100 supplements on my child just to see something will work. And I need to really calm myself down. So I do meditate every day, but I also I'm trying to internalize this idea. I'm still trying, right? And it's a work in progress that suffering is, the saying, right? Pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. So, but this idea that like everybody's going through some sort of pain or suffering, and then it's okay to be a little bit, it's okay for our kids to be a little bit uncomfortable. We're working through it, it will pass. The food, the reason the food part, I'm sure it did trigger me when Sid was younger. It doesn't bother me that much now because I just look at people that are not doing it as living in some sort of temporary bubble. I mean, it's not going to last. It's the thing is that the food environment we're living in is so inflammatory that in a way, like people that have started working on it earlier, it's like, I mean, I wouldn't call having a skin condition or autism or anything lucky in terms of the difficulty people are going through, but still, at least we got to make the change early. I mean, I don't feel like anybody's really exempt from it. If you had to make an analogy, it would be like a child that gets a headache by looking at a screen. And if you look at other kids that are constantly on a screen, and like I wouldn't be jealous of another kid that's constantly on the screen. I know it's not good for them. So that doesn't trigger me. It's like sooner or later, everybody's going to have to figure out their diets. I mean, it's a complete myth that one can eat if you're not reacting to it, you can eat whatever you want. That doesn't work for most people. At some point, you're going to see effects in some way, like when you grow older, it can be joint pains, it can be skin issues, it can be cardiac issues. That isn't a thing. Like just, oh, they can eat whatever they want. That really isn't a thing. So, and if people think it's a thing, that's temporary and it's delusional. So it's
Yeah, no, it's helpful to hear you say it because that's what we've just come to terms with. It's like, yeah, we are all better for it. Like, thank goodness. And now all of my kids, eat way more vegetables. And yeah, it's changed the trajectory of their lives.
They're going to see benefits from that are way farther reaching than just skin issues, right? Or just neurological issues for other kids. That is, and I see that in my son, is that the way he eats and his regulation is so spot on. Like, I see neurotypical kids that are not able to sit in classrooms that have difficulty. You know, there's just the body is uncomfortable, right? But I see that he's developed this kind of steadiness, this calm, this presence. And a lot of it, maybe not all of it, but a lot of it has to do with eating foods that have expanded an inner intelligence.
Yeah. Yes. And that goes full circle with what you're saying and how they're developing their palate and set path to progressing. Because yes, you see it holistically. Like, we homeschool, my kids catch on to concepts so quickly. And it's amazing to see. And yeah, they're able to focus. And it's such a gift. And you just know you're setting them up right.
Absolutely. And to add on to the same discussion of how does it feel when you see others, what you are doing or what another parent is doing, what I was doing and I am doing is a discipline. And what somebody else is doing, is not doing, is that they're not taking on that same discipline, right? It's to me, it's really not different from somebody who decides they want to wake up at 5 a.m. every day and go for a run for half an hour. And I decide that I don't want to do that. Like, my husband will do that. He'll like run for 6 miles and I say, I'm going to enjoy my sleep. He's not jealous of me for enjoying my sleep. I mean, he actually wants to run. So to me, food discipline is discipline too, right? So it is a discipline that you're doing, and every discipline is undertaken because you want a larger result. You want to see a bigger picture because you actually have a vision of something that is going to benefit you because of that discipline. So a lack of discipline isn't something to aspire towards.
No. And like you said, then they also have the issues that we're not seeing. Like, they're having the chronic ear infections or whatever they have, you know. There's something keeping them up at night.
Yes.
And I just found I sleep sounder knowing that I have done every single thing I possibly can to make my kids happy and healthy. And I really do go to bed, you know, most days, not all. Some days I'm like, okay, I can't. But
yes, again, having said that, it is hard. Okay, I'm not taking away from that. And it's unrelenting, and it doesn't stop. So
yeah. And you do all the extra things so that it helps you stay in that discipline, like meal planning and shopping once a week and all the things. But I just love that because I think otherwise it takes away from your joy if you know that you aren't doing everything you can to really help out your kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. A life with constraints is always freer in the long term than a life without constraints.
That's very prolific. Take that in. That's so true. Well, Dr. Vaish, I so enjoyed our conversation today. Where can our listeners follow up with you and check out what you're doing?
So I am very active on social media these days, and you can find me on Instagram, and my handle is Dr. Vaish Sarathy, and that's just DrVaishSarathy, or maybe just do Dr. Vaish and you'll find me. My website is functionalnutritionforkids.com. That's functionalnutritionforkids.com, all just one word or all after each other. And I have a bunch of freebies in there, whether you're planning to learn about education or about nutrition. And my podcast is called Functional Nutrition and Learning for Kids.
Perfect. Well, we will link all those things. I will. I'll link all those things in the show notes. Make sure you go check out all of Dr. Vaish's things because, yeah, she knows her stuff and she's got it all there for you. So thank you again for your time. It was a pleasure speaking with you today.
Same here, Andra. Pleasure mine.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Eczema Kids Podcast. We hope you found valuable insights and support for your child's eczema journey. Remember, you're not alone in this, and our community is here to help. Join our Facebook group, Eczema Solutions for Kids, to connect with other parents, share experiences, and discover natural healing strategies. And if you enjoyed today's episode and want to help other parents find comfort and solutions for their kids, please take a moment to leave a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback makes a huge impact and spreads awareness about our mission. Stay tuned for more empowering conversations, expert advice, and stories of triumph over eczema. Together, we can create a supportive network and make a positive difference in the lives of eczema families everywhere. Thank you for being a part of the Eczema Kids podcast community. And until next time, take care and be well.